Hello,
I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. Thought we'd talk a little bit about Iran and the bomb today. Jim, what is the current status of Iran and their nuclear development? Where do the intelligence analysts think they're at, and how far are they from completing something?
Well, officially, nobody really knows much of anything except IAEA. That's the UN-sponsored nuclear inspection organization. And they say that Iran has pretty much been complying with their facilities that are involved with non-weapons research, but that they cannot get to suspected facilities that are thought to be involved in weapons research, which Iran officially says does not exist, but, you know, everybody's, you know, nodding and winking and saying, well, of course it exists. It's a very similar situation to Iraq in 2003, but it's very different in that we later found out that in Iraq in 2003, Saddam had been trying, had indeed eliminated almost all of his nuclear weapons research, except for the people, which he still had, but had maintained the facade that it still existed in order to scare the Iranians. Now, as far as is known, in an unclassified realm, Iran does have several facilities which are off limits to anybody, except for unless you're connected to the Iranian government, which Israel believes are actually working on a nuclear bomb. Now, they have not, as far as we know, detonated a bomb, tested a bomb. They have tried to smuggle in a lot of, well, they have actually succeeded apparently in many cases, smuggling in components which are used for nuclear weapons. Now, some of these components are dual use, but the fact that they have, you know, tried, and we caught them smuggling in so many electronic and metallurgical components that are specifically used in building a nuclear weapon, makes it all highly suspicious. The intelligence agencies, being intelligence agencies, they're saying very little, you know, that is classifying. You know, they drop a, you know, in other words, on this particular topic, there's been very few leaks from Washington, which is highly unusual. I've asked around. I got to be careful because I no longer hold a, you know, a security clearance. And I get a lot of shrugs, meaning it's very dangerous to talk, or there's really nothing there. It's hard to tell. And I don't want to burn anybody, even inadvertently. But Iranians, now this is the people that you have to pay attention to. I do have connections, you know, to people on the street or people who get on the street in Iran frequently, know people, et cetera, and know what the gossip is. Iranians believe they have a nuclear weapon program, and that they will soon have a nuclear weapon, and they think it's a great thing. So make of all that what you wish. It's a whole lot of nobody's sure.
Jim, I mean, Austin, what do you think, and how do you,
all right,
where do you feel?
One of the things is, and this is something we have speculated about before, how much exchange, interchange, and cooperation there is among rogue nations, in this case, Iran and North Korea. And look, this is wild speculation, Dan, which we do tend to avoid, actually anathematize on Strategy Page, but could North Korea, North Korean tests be made available to the Iranians? And the answer is yes. So, no, we have no evidence, as Jim pointed out, that the Iranians have tested a nuclear weapon. We have very good evidence that the North Koreans have. Now, North Korean weapon, yes, but is there cooperation going on in the background? As Jim says, the open source commentary is at least the potential ties to releases from intelligence agencies. Well, there isn't a whole heck of a lot. Now, just for the record, Jim and I were on a podcast. I want to say it was in 2009, and I believe it was an Instapundit podcast where we got asked this. This question about the development time for an Iranian weapon. And as I recall, basically we said if the Iranians did everything right and rushed it and didn't have anything disrupting, it could be 18 months, as little as 18 months. Now, that was a wild guess based on, I said, you know, we avoid them, but that was based on what we knew about centrifuges and what we knew about their enriched uranium production and the like. In retrospect, it looks wrong, but who knows? What did they run into in terms of development? Was there a hold on the program? There are all kinds of things that could have occurred. Maybe we're now to a time where if they did rush it, they could produce the nuclear weapon. Here is the real heart and soul of this issue, Dan, is technologically, the Iranians have the capability to build a weapon. The timeline is up for grabs. They have apparently the will to build a weapon, and that will has been demonstrated over the last two decades. They certainly supply the volatile and belligerent rhetoric of a rogue state. You know, they refer to Israel as a one-bomb state. We know what their relationship with at least Saddam Hussein's Iraqi regime was. We know what their relationship with their with the Persian Gulf Arab states is. Very, very bad. They're really fighting a proxy regional war in Yemen. And the Ayatollah regime sees the nuclear weapon as a weapon for threatening their enemies, and also a regime defense or regime maintenance weapon, because you know, one of the things that an Indian defense official observed after 1991 in Desert Storm, he was asked what was the lesson of Desert Storm. He says, "Don't confront the United States unless you have a nuclear weapon," is what he said, with supposedly with a smile. But there's some truth to that. So they see that as all right, we've got one, and you're going to leave us alone. It adds to the problems that expeditionary forces, whether they come from Europe or the United States, face when confronting an enemy regime. So those are my comments on it. I think Jim has done a very good job of essaying what we actually know. Are we going to move to disarmament discussions now, Dan, or is that on the table today?
Yeah, that's where we're going. Jim, the current U.S. administration and the NATO allies have been negotiating with Iran. It seems like the mullahs and the Iranian government continue to just draw this out. What is their strategy there?
It's hard to tell, because it is basically a religious dictatorship pretending to be a democracy. In other words, there are elections, but the supreme religious authorities control who can run for office. So there was anybody who seems too anti, living in a religious dictatorship is not even allowed to run for parliament. So they've stacked the parliament with people who back the idea of it basically being a religious dictatorship. Now, that said, the country is very poorly run. The economy's a mess. There's a lot of corruption, especially among the families of the senior clerics, which is widely known and very unpopular. And the clerics do pay close attention to the opinion polls, which are conducted frequently in Iran, because they do have a semi-free, media. They have access, people have access to the internet and what have you. So it's an interesting mishmash of, democracy, freedom, and religious dictatorship. Now, what is known is that the clerics are very well aware of their growing unpopularity, and they want to do something about it. They have noted, and this gets mentioned a lot in the Iranian press, as well as among the Iranian exile community, who are, a lot of them are out in Los Angeles, in California, where they have several, they have websites, they have various organizations in Farsi, you know, the Iranian language and English and what have you. And they are very concerned about the popular will. Now, the clerics understand that this whole business of a nuclear weapons program is very popular inside Iran. Indeed, even a lot of exiles say, well, you know, Iran's a great country. Great countries have nuclear weapons. In other words, they hate the cleric of dictatorship, which basically drove them out of the country. But at the same time, yeah, Iran should have nuclear weapons. It's a very strange situation to westernize, but to Iranians it makes sense. So one of the theories kicking around is that they are basically pulling a Saddam. They haven't got a nuclear weapons program. Well, if they do, it's very, you know, it's very a mishmash, minimal, nothing really amounting to much, obviously, because as Austin pointed out, we were asked 6 years ago, when are they going to have it done? Well, you know, the joke is, you know, for 10 years now, all the experts are saying, you know, within 18 months, you know, Iran's going to have a nuclear weapon. So
Jim, that was an estimate that you and I came up with.
Because anybody else was using it. All people who know this business, you know, how to make nuclear weapons and what have you, and what it would take, and the Japanese say that, and they do have the capability they create plutonium in their power plants, et cetera, you know, and it's no joke in Japan. The Japanese probably could, but intelligence analysts look at this, what the components they need. They know they've smuggled in this component and that component. They have all the components. It's unclear how much weapons grade uranium they've generated with the equipment they've set up, and it's possible that they already have enough for a couple of bombs. But why is there no bomb? Well, that may be because the clerics, one of their scams we do know about is they're constantly announcing new weapons. Now this is a joke, you know, to the outside world, you know, to people who know about weapons development in the West or anyplace else, of course in China. But inside Iran, and we report on these things regularly, it's for domestic consumption, to show the people that they, you know, even with all the embargoes and sanctions and what have you, here's new weapons developed. I mean, talking about tanks, new aircraft, space satellites, which do nothing. They've launched a few of those. You know, the ballistic missiles are nice, but, you know, they don't have that many of them. And you know, that's not really high tech. I mean, that's something that dates back to World War II. So, you know, they do a lot of this, you know, to make themselves look like a legit government. We can defend the country. But whenever they put any of this stuff into action, and that happens very rarely, it's not impressive. So the kicker here is they don't have the resources to take components and put it together into a nuclear weapon and then test it. You've got to remember, North Korea is in a similar situation. They've had several nuclear weapons tests. Most have been described as semi-successful. You know, they call it a fizzle. In other words, there are several ways to build a nuclear weapon badly so that it sort of goes off. You know, it's more like a dirty bomb, you know, just high explosives, you know, the high explosive trigger, you know, spreading nuclear material, you know, over an area. Fortunately, they do this underground. They have not perfected. I mean, there are only four sources of nuclear weapons technology for Iran. They could buy it from Pakistan, North Korea, China, or Russia. Now, we may well have told all four of these countries, you know, one way or the other, that if the Iranians get a nuclear weapon and it's used by terrorists, which is a big problem with any nuclear weapon being owned by, you know, Iran, where officials regularly come out and say we should destroy Israel. You know, that's bad PR. You know, that's bad diplomacy, as it were. And we could tell these other four countries, we will hold you responsible. If some terrorist sets off a nuclear weapon that's traced back to Iran, and then we find out that you supplied them with key components, you know, there will be consequences. Now, all these countries have nuclear weapons, and they realize that once you get a nuclear weapon, you're in a club that And some people think, well, maybe we shouldn't have done this, because you realize there could be consequences. If you, I mean, India and Pakistan, they both, you know, got their nuclear weapons live about the same time in the late 90s. You know, when they did that, suddenly you could see this being played out in the mass media in both countries, the newspapers, and a lot of them have English editions, so it was, you didn't have to know, you know, Hindi or Urdu in order to follow this debate. People on both sides were saying, oh my God, what have we done? You know, and they started describing, well, if either side threw a nuclear weapon and the other side retaliated, how many hundreds of millions of people would die? And suddenly, you know, nuclear weapons weren't such a great thing anymore. You know, the conversation sort of died out as people just sort of sat there in the dark, you know, wondering, what have I done? Now, that's something the Iranians might be realizing, that if they actually got a nuclear weapon and there was any chance of using it, and there could be consequences that they don't want. So there's a good possibility that they haven't developed a nuclear weapon in all these 18-month cycles they've had, God, maybe 10, 18-month cycles to develop it. Because they really don't have the capabilities or the will. But like Saddam, they're afraid to say, well, no, we're not going to do it. Now, Saddam backed away because he simply didn't have the resources. He was under sanctions. You know, he was basically starving the Shia in order to keep the 20% Sunni minority who was based on support, you know, fed and reasonably happy. But he, at the same time, he was making the Shia, who tolerated him for a while, but now by the end of the 90s, they really hated him big time. He was basically, you know, creating a monster, a Frankenstein, so to speak, that would eventually devour him. That's exactly what happened. So the Iranians sitting right across the border are saying, gee, is this deja vu or what? So, you know, there are no simple answers to the Iranian bomb question because there are so many things that make no sense whatsoever.
Austin, could you address that a little bit, and we'll wrap it up with you today?
Yeah. Look, let me make a couple other comments. I should have said when we made that 18-month test, there were other commentators and analysts out there that had similar months. It was 18 to 24 months, and it really wasn't, quote-unquote, as wild as North Korea's testing weapons on behalf of the Ayatollahs. There were analytic reasons based on what, you know, evidence that you knew, open source, that seemed to be reliable for giving them that kind of window. And just to make a comment, too, on what Jim said about the Japanese, but this was 2 years ago. I was at a seminar, and one of the people there asked me, Austin, it was one of the times that Japan and China were having one of their more public confrontations, and a fellow asked me, how long would it take the Japanese to get a nuclear weapon? And I flippantly said, Dan, oh, a couple of days. I mean, being flipped, but given the prowess the Japanese have and their access, as Jim says, to fuel, technology, stuff, you're looking at a very short timeline, and very likely the Japanese would have what we'll call a competent bomb with triggers, and it's, in other words, it's useful, and it's not going to be like the North Korean weapon, which Jim called it the fizzle. It was the fissile fizzle is one of the ways, one of the funny headlines I recall when the first test went off. Look, the domestic utility of the program is evident. Jim addressed that, and Jim also. But you know, I think they want one. I think the core of this regime really wants one, because in that core, Dan, which is a democratic dictatorship, are people who really believe in their case, their version of Islamist dominance. And it's also, this addresses what Jim said about even Iranian expatriates and many Iranians who are Shia religious zealots, is also tied to almost a 4th or 5th century notion of Iranian / Persian centrality, political centrality. They see themselves on an ethnic basis, remember, as Aryans, as far superior to their Semitic neighbors, and their Semitic neighbors being Arabs, and of course the problems they have with the Israelis, or the Jews, as they call the Israelis. There's a component to that. So yes, we deserve to have a nuclear weapon because we're superior to all of our neighbors. They don't like to talk about the Pakistanis to their to their rear, or the Baluchis, who are all Sunnis, and by the way, there's a Baluchi insurgency going on in eastern Iran right now, and they don't want to talk about their own fragile domestic situation. But the Quran does have domestic political utility, but so does some of the wild and crazy statement, Israel is a one-bomb state. Jim, it's terrible diplomacy, it's stupid, and it puts the Israelis, who have extraordinary military technological capabilities, in the position of, hey, we're coming at you, and they don't kid around. But it also has a domestic utility among, you know, their Revolutionary Guards, Pasa Duran, Basiji types. It's galvanizing. Plus, they look at one time, too, before the totally evident split between Iran and Saudi Arabia, it had some sort of Islamist international appeal. Some of this, Dan, and it's the last thing I'll point out here, Kitchen, we've seen this really in public in the last 2 months, though if you trace this back, the Egyptians and Saudis, even in 2013 and definitely in 2014, we're talking about closer military cooperation, and there was even an Egyptian, it's unclear what this was, it's been reported in several places, an Egyptian training exercise involving several Arab nations, but at the behest of the Saudis, and it was in November of 2014. But the creation of this quote-unquote pan-Arab force, pan-Arab army, but then the same as air forces as well, to confront the Iranians. There was a story that ran, and I believe it was on AFP, Agence France Presse, where I saw it, but if it wasn't, it would have been, I think it was Reuters, of a Saudi talk show host who's kind of apparently crazy guy. He's referred to as he's compared to some American sensationalist talk show host who said, you know, if the Iranians get serious about this, let's ask the Israelis to hit them with a nuclear weapon. And of course, there was the little, I couldn't understand the video. It was in Arabic, but that was what the English translation said. That was the gist of his spiel on television. You're seeing more public manifestations of what we've known as background cooperation between the Israelis and Saudis and Israelis and Egyptians. And I don't think the Iranians really wanted this. I don't know how resilient it is in public after all the years of anti-Israeli vicious Israeli propaganda coming out of the Arab world, but you know, you threaten somebody, and you threaten somebody with nuclear weapons, which the Iranians are doing. People react to it, and the Saudis are reacting. The Qataris, I'll tell you, the Emiratis are definitely reacting. The Israelis are reacting, and so are the Egyptians. I don't think that's, as Jim said, it's not good diplomacy.
Well, I guess that brings up the question then. I'll put this both to you and Jim, is the NATO-American attempt to get some sort of agreement, is that a destabilizing agreement for the Middle East then?
Jim, why don't you hit that first?
Well, no, it isn't, because the Arabs want some sort of guarantee that they aren't going to face an Iran that is openly and secretly armed with nuclear weapons. And the one thing the Iranians have dug their heels in over is any intrusive verification of their claims that they are not building any nuclear weapons. Now, this is the same problem with Saddam Hussein in before 2003. He allowed inspectors in, but certain places they couldn't go to. And we knew something was going on. In fact, when his two sons-in-laws defected, then went back and got murdered, another soap opera. But they said there's something going on. Now, again, what they didn't know was that Saddam was running a scam on everybody except a very small inner circle, you know, to make everybody believe that they had a secret, you know, weapons of mass destruction program, but we had to keep it secret from the farmers. And I can play them and, you know, eventually get the sanctions lifted without giving up anything. So this sounds very familiar to what's going on in Iran. They say, no, we haven't got it. You can't prove it. But no, we won't let you double check. And that's where it stands right now. The Iranians are saying, you know, when Obama said we have a how should I put it, a guideline, an outline agreement, as it were, the senior Iranian cleric came back and said, no, we don't, not if you're going to insist on being able to verify our claims of innocence. And that's where it stands right now. It's a standoff again. You know, there are claims that there's an agreement, but there are Iranian claims that there is no agreement if you're going to insist on verifying everything we claim, to not be doing.
Hey, Dan, I said the talk show host was Saudi. I just checked it. He was Egyptian. And I got thinking that as soon as I said Saudi, no. He's Egyptian. He was has an Egyptian talk show, and you know he was shooting his mouth off. But the thing is that he hadn't been silenced yet. And there's a very oddball statement from a oddball Arab broadcaster. As I said, there's how resilient, at least in the open, this kind of cooperation between the Israelis and the Egyptians and Saudis would remain is. For grabs, who knows? But that is a strange thing to kind of say, and it does echo some statements that when the WikiLeaks came out attributed various Saudi defense officials that if the Iranians threatened them, they were going to open an air corridor for the Israelis to fly over Saudi Arabia to go take the Iranians out. And that was, you know, some of the WikiLeaks quote-unquote secret cables, which were just reinforcing or exposing things that the rumor intelligence had said had been the case for years. So anyway, a complicated situation. I do not. I'm sorry. I think that the negotiations that are going on are going to come to naught. That's what I think. So.
So you think the mullahs will just keep stringing them out as long as they can?
Yeah. And like we go back on Jim saying some of the stuff doesn't make sense. Here's one frame it makes sense. The whole thing is to make it look like we're tough. We've got a weapons program, and we just keep rolling the ball forward. So.
And the longer they string them out, too, the better the mullahs look to their own people.
Some of that. Yeah, we're standing up to the world.
Sure. Right. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there, and we'll talk to you gentlemen next time.
Bye, guys.
Indeed. Come on.